Mrs. Watt. 19th June, 1963. Thank you for putting me on the time track. I'd gotten off of it. Good thing, too. St. Hill Special Briefing Course. I haven't anything much to talk to you about. Except modern techniques. And I think I better give you a summary of modern auditing as it looks. Might be valuable to you. There are innumerable processes. There have been processes of all different shapes and kinds up and down the last 25 years. And recorded during that period, the way is more or less the work of about 14 of these years. And these processes fall into very specific categories of which you have a record in your state of case scale. Now, the categories they fall into, however, are processes that handle certain conditions or of a case. And if we look this over very carefully, we'll see that cases deteriorate as they go on down along the time track. And they deteriorate against two factors. And the primary factor that they deteriorate against is confront. And the other factor is duplication. As they become unwilling to confront, they become less capable of duplication. Now, you should look on confront as a willingness and duplication as an ability. Now, it doesn't matter that you run, what are you willing to duplicate or unwilling to duplicate? It doesn't matter that you use that in the process too much. But it's not exactly right. It's not quite right. It's something like the officer of the change of the guards at Buckingham Palace wearing his sword on the wrong side, really. If you were to ask somebody, what are you able to duplicate? And what do you feel you are unable to duplicate? You would have a very exact sort of process. And remembering our process rules and the famous brackets and so forth to keep it from damming up a flow, why, you have to get the other fellow in there at least. You know, what would you be willing? You see, there's a lot of combination to it. What would you be... What do you believe another is able to duplicate, don't you see, and is unable to duplicate? That's your second leg. You see? Of course, you can add up these legs ad infinitum. And the reason why these legs get added up infinitum is the degree of complexity necessary to undercut the case. That's the purpose of legs. Some case could run practically all the way. That'd be a very high-scale case. He'd practically run all the way on just one leg, you see. Well, that'd be a case not troubled too much by flows. And another case, well, you run just what is he unable and what does he believe another is unable, you see. All right, that's all right. That's fine. As you've got two-way flows, but both viewed from the same viewpoint. Now, what does another believe he is unable to duplicate? Now, that's the other flow from another viewpoint. You get the idea. And the whole thing about flows is how much do you need them for this particular case, you see. And flows are interesting at this point because you can always doctor up the flows of a situation, get TA action when you might not otherwise have it. Yeah, it's quite important. You see, TA action is not totally outside the auditor's control if he remembers flows and brackets. All he has to do is study up on brackets, and you add enough brackets to get TA action. That's the way you handle brackets. And there is no perfect method of running brackets. There is no absolutely perfect method. If you ran all of the available flows, do you realize at any given instant, on this planet alone, there are 2.5 billion, or maybe it's 3.5 billion today. It was 2.5 billion yesterday, the population explosion. There are 2.5 billion other viewpoints simultaneously operating at that exact instant. So that would make something on the order of 2.5 billion legs, plus all the legs that take care of all the intermediate groups and dynamics present at that particular moment, you see. And it just becomes completely ridiculous. I'm giving you an idea that you can become very ridiculous in the numbers of legs that you use in process. Now, the idea of flows is something that monitors all case levels, and for some peculiar reason, breaks its back at about level 4. In other words, you could get as complicated or as simple as you like above level 4, but below level 4, it goes in harmonics, so that you get down to the person who is almost at the bottom, and you only have one viewpoint, which is self. You see, so it becomes impossible for this person who is well downscale to run more than one viewpoint. You see, even though it's vitally necessary that he run two, he can only run one. Now, this is a problem of the dynamics at work, in actual fact. It's how many dynamics can a person function on. Now, that, however, and this I'm trying to give you a look at here, sounds rather complicated to you, that there are many facets of processing wherein you could match up to an ideal. You could match up to an ideal. What is the ideal process, or the perfect process, you see? The one that absolutely matches every single condition extant on a case, you see? Well, I'm trying to make this point with these brackets and legs, you see? The absolute ideal, totally perfect process from a standpoint of... I define science today. What was that? Science is a... modern science is a method of precisely determining overwhelming nonsense. Well, the point I'm trying to make here is that you could go ahead mathematically, you see, and you could figure out some of the wildest combinations that would be absolutely vital to a process. You see, there's 2.5 billion people on Earth, so at any given instant to run the PC, you have to have the viewpoint of each one of these people taken into account one way or the other. And then there are various other factors, such as their cases. So their case viewpoints and modifications thereof would have to be taken into effect. And what we are trying to do, we completely lose sight of. We're trying to cure the PC's burned finger. So you have this thing called the ideal, and you have this other thing called the workable. Now, the workability of a process is what determines its complexity. How complex or uncomplex does it have to be workable? And that's how you determine what process to use. That's how you determine how many legs there should be in running out brackets and so forth. In other words, how many do you have for it to work? Now, that factor goes on into the number of processes you have. Now, there could probably be an infinite number of processes. And sometimes I feel that I have developed an infinite number of processes, and you, in studying bulletins, undoubtedly feel sometimes that you've had to study an infinite number. But let me assure you that many more types of processing have been dropped by a factor of thousands times, or thousands of times more processes have been dropped and discarded than have been retained. Why? They are pretty, but do they work? You see, that's the criterion. They're pretty, but do they work? All right. So that limits, then, the number of processes which have survived. And the number of processes which survived are those processes which have not just workability, but which have very broad workability. And now we come up against this factor, that there are types of cases. Cases aren't GI issue X case. See? It's not always an issue case. So we have to determine the common denominators present in all cases. See, what are the common denominators present in all cases? Well, they happen to be ARC. They, oddly enough, are the midroot buttons. And certain types of incidents common to everyone's time track. Which is to say, their general history of all cases is quite similar. The reaction of the case, though, to this history is quite different, because the combinations of history make differences of cases. And when we study differences of cases, we again could get out into the most overpowering library of textbooks you ever heard of. We could have Kraplin's chart multiplied by 5,000 or 6,000. You know, everybody thinks that's a phony gag of mine, but you know, it isn't, you know. That chart really exists, and it's really called that. this vast number of cases, he had a vast number, and they took it over to America, and they added a vaster number. This became one of the finest lists of gobbledygook anybody ever had anything to do with. It's totally meaningless. Because they were getting up to two idiocies. Either there was one case that was supposed to represent one case type that included all cases. See, that's one type of idiocy. You know, everybody is a schizophrenic. That's the way they establish cases these days, is what institute he was sent to. That's actually what they use for case classification. If he went to Walnut Lodge and they treat schizophrenics, then the guy's a schizophrenic, you see? Simple. Everybody is a schizophrenic, or there is a case type for every case. Hey, these are two idiocies. One case type for every case. There's 5,000 patients, so there's 5,000 case types in one institution. Well, this type of approach to the problem is completely unreal, because it's not workable. It's not useful. An auditor has no use for it at all. You might as well say that my PC's name is Betty, so therefore I am auditing a Betty case type. Well, funny part of it is it has some truth. See, there's no other case that is exactly like this case. But there are other denominators. There are other denominators which are similar. This case has in common certain things with every other case. Now, you can divide case types up, but again, just for use. You can divide case types up into a few case types. But what is the meaning of this? It would simply be for the purpose of matching them up to processes. That would be the only reason you would get different types of cases today. So you can match them up to the processes. Well, a great deal more work could be done on this than has been done even. But we would get, again, probably an excess of what we needed. We'd be getting too complex for what we were trying to do. So you can go in two directions, and err in two directions in trying to classify types of processes. You can get so many case types that nobody under the sun would ever be able to use that scale or chart in handling any case. And the other one is to have one case type without any variation whatsoever. Now, the first way would lose quite a few cases because you couldn't find their case type on it or something. You see, it was not quite a beta and was really not an alpha. So it's a beta sub-alpha case type, but there is no process which has been aligned for this particular type because it doesn't belong on the chart or something, and nobody get processed, you see. And on the other side of the picture, we just set somebody down and we say, thud, this is what you are going to run, and every so often the auditor has a horrendous loss because he's got a case type that just doesn't quite fit that process. It's a little bit too grossly out. We can't fit this case type into that exact process, but we have to do something else. So what we need is a finite number of case types based on behavior in an auditing session, not behavior in life. They make it quite real. And then match up processes which do handle and raise the case up that scale. And that is what is needful here for our purposes. Now, you can't expect auditors to memorize and perform more than a few auditing types perfectly. If you expect them to, you get a slopover quite rapidly, whereby they mix auditing types and styles, and it gets to be pretty much hash. So you try to keep these things separate, not because of the limitations of the auditor, but it takes quite a little while to get experienced and grooved in on a type of auditing. It takes quite a little while to do this. Now, probably repetitive command auditing is so familiar to you that you don't look on it as something that is very difficult to handle. It's pretty easy. There it is. That's all there is to it. Do you remember the first day you ever started to do a repetitive process on somebody? Well, the reason why you look on that easy is you're so familiar with it. For instance, it bears no great qualms to the vast majority of auditors to sit there and give the same auditing command over and over and over and simply acknowledge it on and on. They look on that as very easy auditing. That's a long sleep. And that's all there is to it. Bang, 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 bang. See? So this particular thing is a lesson in common to all types. You have learned it, so you don't regard it with any great horror. Now, the CCHs, you take somebody who has never done the CCHs, and you give them CCH 1, 2, 3, 4, and they can get further afield with this than you could easily imagine. In fact, the whole of auditors had gotten completely afield over a period of years. It had gradually drifted down to a grind, and there was no such thing as a flat point in the CCH, you see. And regardless of whether the fellow was doing an auditing command or not, you just kept on running the auditing command, don't you see? Actually, repetitive processes have slopped over into the CCHs. When did you end these CCHs? Well, it's much more important to end the CCH properly than a repetitive command properly. Now, the CCHs have also the frailty of auditing people who are lower on the tone scale, that is, those who are really going to require nothing but CCH or something like that. These people are lower on the effect scale and therefore are much more easily boxed about than, knocked about. Bad auditing has a much worse effect on them than it has on somebody else who is upscale. So therefore, it's a type of process which at once looks brutal on cases that react brutally, but is a kid glove type of process. Well, by the time you've absorbed all these factors, and time you've gotten used to all this, and time that you can successfully and adequately run the CCHs, why, you've learned quite a bit. I remember I had to study very hard to learn how to run the CCHs, and I eventually got quite good at it, and went ahead and became quite comfortable running the CCHs. And after a period of about 5 years, I hadn't done any CCHs, I uncorked the original CCHs as they were done and as they were getting case results here at St. Hill and put on a television demonstration with regard to it. And everybody thought that I was running something else and they had never heard of these CCHs. Vast revelation to me that they weren't getting results with the CCHs they were overlooking. But these were the original CCHs. And they were quite calm and quite delicate. And everybody had gone into the effort bands, you know. Boom! You know, and you grind it out, you know, and that sort of thing. Well, these things can slip. These things can slip. Well, how many types of auditing do you care to keep in line? Let's say you're an instructor, DT, or something like that in some district or area. How many types of processing do you think you can keep in line? Keep policed and keep well done if principal types go out. Well, it's a small number. It's a small number, and by the time you've got one of these things all boxed up and written up and delivered and being done, every now and then you have to unpeel the thing and get it reviewed because it's shifted and it's no longer producing results. It's variation which knocks out process types. We stopped accumulating process types when I learned that. People shifting from the original type of process would then apparently bring about a need for a new process type. And that has plagued you more than you believe. Because all I would see that auditors were no longer getting results with the CCHs, and I would tend to drop them. But then I got very, very eager beaver on this, and I went into it because of this experience here at St. Hill. And I found out that a process type shifts very badly, and it shifts out of workability over a period of years. So it has to be put back in again. And you find out you don't need new process. You need the original process type again. Refurbished. Polish up the old teapot and get cracking, and you're making tea again, see? Tends to go to pieces. Now, that, by the way, is more of a limiting factor than you would believe, how to keep processes in line, how to keep them working, and so forth. It's an important factor. You say, well, they used to say that they got results with this process, but we don't see any results in it now. It's called duplication processing. Don't see any results with this processing these days. Well, get clever and go dig up a bulletin from the year Zud, see? You find out the auditing command is not as it is modernly. You will find out the auditing command is modernly. Duplicate nothing, thank you. Duplicate nothing, thank you. Duplicate nothing. You'll find out that wasn't the original auditing command. And as an auditing form, you don't always interrupt the PC when the PC answers the question. The thing is to get the PC to answer the question, not to prevent the PC from answering the question. These little variations will creep in. You mark my words, man. Now, I don't mean to be sarcastic. You'd be surprised how technology can vary over a period of years. Friends, we haven't a clue what Buddhism was all about. We really don't have a clue. There might have been some very good processing in there, you know. And just now, I'm almost certain that the planet builders, a couple, 300 trillion years ago, had some technology. They had must have had some mental technology of some kind or another. And one of these days, when I got some time, case-wise, I'm going to get run over that area very carefully, and so I can winnow out any technology they might have had in its original state. And it might have been the planet builders, if they had technology, went downhill only because the technology got varied out of existence. So in other words, process types are then also limited by how many you can keep in line. See? So therefore, the simpler process types tend to survive better than the more complicated process types. Now, but even the simpler ones will drift out of line. So that's a class of processes, the CCHs. The CCHs are sufficiently marvelous that old HC was elected as the best case booster by the field auditors in the United States on a query by me in 1958. It won hands down over anything under the sun. I don't even know how they were doing it today, but it must have been fairly correct because it was only about a... It was only a few years from its inception. Must have been fairly correctly run during those days. Well, there's a case type. What is this case type? Well, it's the case type where you get a duplication going with another person and a duplicative physical order followed by another person. Another person has a great deal to do with this. You're following the instructions from another person, and you're directing your attention at the physical universe and so forth, and this is all quite important to it. Funny part of it is that as you drop one level, you tend to drop that out. You get the reach and withdraw processes. Now, these are still duplicative processes. These are still following the orders of a person, but you should look on those as limitations. That's a limitation of the process. That is no longer a benefit of the process. The process works on the lowest level cases in spite of these things. Now, there's a whole band of processes which are so simple and so idiotic that everybody would tend to overlook those processes entirely. And here's another reason. Nobody could possibly see that the process would have very much use. So the process dies. And with it dies the lowest level cases that you attack, and so you get loses. You need that process. So here's another way a process can go out, is because it is seldom used. Seldom used. Actually, it's the only known way to process cat or monkey. And you'd be surprised what happened to Don Breeding's dog one day when he's starting to run a sort of a reach and withdraw. He was trying to run 8C, which was too high upscale, and the dog passed out. That's right, the dog passed out. It was too high upscale. What he needed was the reach and withdraw processes. You can do remarkable things with the reach and withdraw processes. It's probable that you would not really carry one forward far enough to flatten it, because it's another thing is the process works so slowly, even though it works positively, that it tends to be neglected. Now, I think you could probably get a cat to talk with the reach and withdraw band of processes. I mean it. I think you could get a cat to talk. But, how would you go about processing a cat, you see? Well, the same way you tend to process children. Sloppily, hunt and punch, no regular sessions, not treating it with the dignity that auditing demands, don't you see? You know, a lot of Scientologists' kids are going to be practically unprocessable in a few more years if people keep hunting and punching, processing on them, you know. Grabbing them off as they pass by and running an assist, don't you see, and never flattening the audit and command and so forth. I'm surprised here once in a while one of my kids will yelp when I say I'm going to give them an assist, you know. They yelp. You know, they're usually very pleased, but once in a while I will propose something like this and I'll get a protest. And I don't know, something's gone on, has something to do with it. They just don't happen to want anything to do with this thing called processing just now. Well, what is it? It's some hunt-and-punch processing they've had without the dignity of an auditing session or anything like that, and that's practically all they get. Well, that's all a cat would get either. You wouldn't say to the cat, all right with you if I begin this session now. Any goals you'd like set for this session? And yet, in actual fact, you'd have to put the session in some kind of a frame. And you'd be surprised after you gave the cat about 4 or 5 sessions, the cat would know the frame. See? Start of session, end of session. You know? They know that during that period, between those two commands, they were supposed to stand there and do whatever you're supposed to say. Another thing is the idea of power of choice, overwhelming power of choice, and that sort of thing. Probably be mishandled. Cat starts to walk off, and you say, the hell with that, you know, and you herd him back into session again. But in actual fact, if you observed these very straightforward rules of auditing, that a session had to have a frame, it had to begin and it had to end, if you weren't trying to overwhelm the PC and so forth, and if you were willing to give a cat as much time as you would give a human being, give the cat a 50-hour intensive. You see, their intentions. It's very hard to do because the intention span of a cat's probably 10 minutes. Have to be 50 hours worth of 10-minute sessions, don't you see? Wow. And then remember that cat as a cat is going to come up tone scale. That's another thing that auditors neglect. Oddly enough, a properly processed cat will not claw up his auditor. He just starts clawing up everybody else. So you get a situation here. What will reach and withdraw processes do? Well, actually, you don't know and I don't know. Our experience with them is something like Joe has been sick for a long time. So we take his hand and we say, touch the pillow, and touch the pillow and say thank you. And we say, touch the sheet, and he touches the sheet and we say thank you. You know, we take his hand and make him touch the sheet. And we do between two objects here, back and forth and around, make him touch various things, more randomly than that, probably. That is, say, touch your forehead, touch the sheet, touch the pillow, touch the shoe that you put up on the edge of the bed or something. And the end product of it is his eyelids flutter, and he comes to. And then we decide we'd better give him some processing. So we have another source of the disappearance of processes, which you can put under the head of disrespect. We don't respect the process, and so it tends to vanish from ken. See, it's a process which we use diffidently in certain ways. Actually, old ARC processing disappeared on that route. So we really don't know what the reach and withdraw band amounts to because we have almost never carried through a reach and withdraw process. When you were doing book and bottle, which is a reach and withdraw process with duplication, it's a band process. It hangs right between reach and withdraw and the CCHs. When you were doing that, did you ever flatten it? I almost have no Scientologist I've ever run into has ever flattened this. They say they've done 8 hours of it, or 10 hours of it, or 18 hours of it, or 25 hours of it, and I've heard 30 hours of it being done, or something of this nature. Well, I've never heard of it being flattened. And yet, do you know that nearly everybody exteriorizes under that process when it's run over about 10 hours? That's something to think about. Now, have any of you ever had the sudden illusion that you forgot to raise your arm from the side in touching the book, but put your theta beam arm up, or wondered what was happening here? You got a confusion between your body and any quote, excuse me for using the word, astral body. What's this all about? Looks to me like that's neglected sphere of processing, not respected. It's to make an auditor capable of doing a repetitive process, and that's what we believe it is. There are enormous numbers of processes in that particular band. Lots of them. One of the most fruitful bands of processing there is reach and withdraw, practically unexplored. And some respectable percentage of the cases that you try to push all the way up are not going to move until they're run on reach and withdraw. They won't move on the CCHs. Isn't that an interesting datum? Now, as I've been winnowing out processes then, I have come to the conclusion that we have the processes which undercut all cases, that you can lay your hands on. But as we have moved down the lower lines, because we were always pressuring at the top, we kept forgetting the bloke who was at the bottom. And through disrespect to the process, because of its limited use, had not much cared to develop it. All of this is very vital in a summary of modern processing, is to realize why processes disappear and what processes are all about, rather than process A, B, and C have survived, period. You've got ahead of you times when you will practically be in tears over a case. For some reason or other, the case has done an off the top of the springboard down to the bottom of the state of case scale. For some reason, they've had a catastrophe or something occur in their lives. The problems are too great for them, or something has happened, and you just, tone arm action ceases. Case stops moving. You say, all right, we're going to get problems straight. This case obviously has got problems. You know, the case has problems. After all, anybody who marries three wives and so forth, burgles a bank, is liable to have problems. So, all right, now, let's just cut right into this. And let's get rid of these problems. We'll be able to get on with our engram running where we were before. Cheerily, cheerily. You'll overlook something. Problems belong at repetitive processes. And the bottom of repetitive processes are at case level six. That's the absolute bottom of repetitive processes. And this case of yours has done a temporary surge, you see, that you're auditing, not your case, but your auditing, has done a temporary surge or a temporary collapse and is sitting squarely at 8. You can't run problems on the case. Yes, it's true that the case has problems, but the case does not respond to running problems. So our next division in processing is what the auditor knows is wrong with the case and what can be done with the case. And these are entirely different things. So your common denominator of all cases is very well to know in theory, but paralleling this is what can be done with these cases. What can be done with them? Yeah, all right. So you say, we got a thetan here, and he's in a body, and he's got a time track, which has got lots of engrams on it. It's got the heliotropus implants on it, and goals for that particular character, and it's got, and he's got certain types of things that he's refusing to duplicate. And we've got all these things. His ARC is low. He's been ARC broken. We can say all these things. Yes, that's what's wrong with the case. Yeah, we're absolutely right. There's nothing wrong with anything we have said. But let's get over to the other side of the thing. What can we do about it? So we get over into the category of what I'm referring to as modern processes. Modern processes have nothing to do with what is wrong with the case. Unlike therapeutic or curative procedures or something like that, you have nothing to do with these things. They're sort of hand in glove ingrained because of the Asclepian school and other schools of medicine as they've come up the line, you see. The case has lumbosis. Therefore, we give him some thrombosis powder. See? That is a level of thinking. That is a certain thinkingness. And it's a very, very easy method of thinking. It's very comfortable, it's very lazy, and very ineffective. We're not in the business of curing things. But we nevertheless tend to, because thinkingness tends to, go along the line of what is wrong with a case has to be righted. And that's not true in Scientology. You see how idiotic it is. You say, this case keeps saying, vomica, nix vomica. Vomica, nix vomica. That's all a case says. We say, very good. Stuck in the heliotropous implants. Good. He's got a goal to vomica. Well, now let me assure you of something. If this case is dramatizing something, that something is not real to the case. And you can put that down as one of the guiding rules of running processes. Yes, sir. If the case is dramatizing something, it's not real to the case. And right away, he's got lumbosis, so we give him some anti-lumbosis powder, instantly folds up. You got to bypass that type of thinkingness entirely. The only observation you have to do of a case is, does it respond to the process which is being run on the case? You put that down. That's the other guiding rule. Very simple. Does it respond to the process that is being run on the case? That is everything there is to it. Does it respond to the process that's being run on the case? Why do we mean by respond? Well, we get in tone arm action. Now, there can be one thing wrong with this thing called tone arm action. Tone arm action can cease because session rudiments aren't in. Very definitely. Tone arm action can cease because session rudiments are out. So, therefore, we have to assume in auditing that something like session rudiments are in, or that we run a process which undercuts session rudiments, such as the reach and withdrawal CCHs. And to some slight degree, sec-checking undercut session rudiments. And also, our flow's getting out of line. Let me give you an example. The heliotropous implants and most of the engrams you'll dig up are motivators. I don't care how else you look at it, they are motivators. There are some overts running down the lines. The nasty things you thunk or the PC thunks while he's running these motivators. They are motivators. TA action will probably cease sooner or later on the case. Or you run out 6 or 8 goals and you run out 15, 20 engrams and you all of a sudden are looking at no TA action. Where's the TA action gone? It was there. The case was getting TA action on this type of processing. So this really applies to ceased TA action. Those processes on which TA action have been observed. This only then applies to processes on which TA action has been observed. If TA action has been observed on a process, then TA action will cease only for 3 reasons. The session rudiments are out. The rule of flows, under which we include the overt motivator sequence, and the situation is not in accord with the case's forward progress. The case has not got, has not any ability to move on forward because the process is flat. So they're just your three conditions there. Session rudiments are out. Flows, under which we include also overt motivators, been upset, however, the process is flat. And it's for one of these reasons TA action ceases, but that's for TA action which has existed. TA action has existed. Now, you can recover TA action on something that has had TA action. One way or the other, unless by remedying one and two of what I just gave you, or the third one is true, the process is flat. Now, all this is very well, but when you're taking a case apart, putting it back together again, if your goal is to cure a malady, if you're idiotic enough to use Scientology to cure somebody of something, you are going to have probably the easiest run of it you ever heard of. Modern processes result in dropping somatics and that sort of thing with great rapidity. You're running a fellow over his head, he'll have a new sickness every day. A new set of somatics, if they were to be medically adjudicated and diagnosed, would wind up in some of the most horrendous Latinizing you ever heard of. Teeth hurt one day, and his skull hurts the next day, and he's got spears in his stomach the day after, and his bones feel like they're falling apart, and terrible exhaustion exceeds the next day. Well, of course, for each one of these things, under terrible exhaustion, obviously he's short of iron. And you get more maladies than you could easily keep a catalog of just in the line of processing. If you process somebody very badly over his head, these maladies be quite acute. This is not important, then. Health has nothing to do with the situation. If you mean by health, care of the body, and that's just a bunch of balderdash. The only thing we're interested in is the continuing progress of the case. Is the case more and more capable? And if you want to look at the reduction and not worry about the capabilities of OTs or anything else, but just look at it. Well, is he more and more capable of being audited? That's the shortest look. That's a very unreal look, but... more and more capable of being audited. If you just count case advance on the fact the case is easier and easier to audit, you'll have it. Because why? Well, that means the case is more and more responsive to exterior orders, which is one of the things he's most allergic to. The case is more and more capable of viewing his track and pictures. The case is getting into less and less trouble. Case is more and more capable of locating bypass charge. All of these various capabilities show up in auditing sessions. So if you wanted a good yardstick that didn't strain your brains any on case advance, well, it's just, is the case more capable of being audited? That is not your end view, but it's certainly a good yardstick for the auditor. Because if the case became more and more capable of being audited and responded better and better and better to auditing, and was easier and easier and easier to audit, you'd find out they're making faster and faster changes per session, and you're getting more and more and more done per session. You're having less and less and less trouble, and that's a good index. And one of the ways of looking at it on a case that's on a long haul, auditors get very dull to the progress of a case, by the way. They do. This is one of the short-sightedness of auditors and one of the things that monitors processes and so forth. You can't ever believe an auditor that a process isn't working. It's not that he's being villainous or anything of the sort, but he's looking at a slow gradient. And it's just he's there, he's auditing, and the gradient is a slow gradient. I'll give you a trick for this. There's nothing wrong with an auditor, and I'm not being critical of auditors at all. It's just something I've noticed as a frailty that auditors have. They don't notice that a case is winning and gaining. And they sometimes get impatient and want to do something more heroic or something of the sort. They get to pushing and shoving, and the case is already going along just gorgeously. I have a basic rule, by the way. I never change anything on a case's auditing unless the PC squawks. I find out I always squawk before the PC does. I always get more impatient than the PC does. So I'll just give you a short one to counter this particular fault in other auditors or in yourself. How was this case a month ago? See? And you can just say that in a snide tone of voice. And the guy says, well, you look at it like that. They couldn't get up the front steps. Something like this. I remember that this case used to have 15 ARC breaks per session. Now only has one, or sometimes goes a whole session with none. Okay, case gains. That's case gains in the direction of auditing. And by the way, that shortcuts a lot of very fancy mental tests and case tests and all that sort of thing. It just puts a complete shortcut on the lot. Case auditing better? All right, there it is. So much so that regardless of any other rule of auditing, if a case is proceeding satisfactorily and is very interested in what he's doing, I won't disturb the case. I won't do anything else. Okay. Case is happy, so on. The only objection I'll have to this is sometimes I see a process, particularly a newly started process, and it hasn't produced any result for a whole session. And so forth. And PC seems to be happy with it. I come off of it. Or the PC got some tone arm action on a new process and ran it quite successfully for a session, but in the very next session, in spite of session roots, nothing, I can't get that process to produce tone arm action again. The PC is fairly happy with the process, but I'm not. But that, of course, is actions that you take in establishing processes. How long does it take to establish a process? Well, that's quite interesting. That's an interesting question. How long is a piece of string? Sometimes you won't establish the PC's level of processes for several sessions. You keep hunting and punching around on a case, and all of a sudden, why, the case starts winning, you get TA action, everything is running. You sit down for the long haul, and you wait for that condition to cease to be ideal before you do anything else. Just keep on it. Actually, don't even pay too much attention to tone arm action. So for a series of five sessions, the tone arm action has been minimal. It was good. It was good for quite a while, and then now it's minimal for that many sessions and so forth. I wouldn't do anything desperate with the case. I wouldn't start tearing the case to pieces because he wasn't getting tone arm action. I wouldn't pull a case off a single engram, for instance. Let me show you the reductio ad absurdum. PC doesn't get tone arm action in the last half of the engram. Well, so you better not let him run that chain anymore. That'd be the most absurd type of thing, you see, that you could do. PC got two divisions of tone arm action during the first half of the engram, but didn't get any tone arm action during the last half of the engram, so it must be wrong engram. You can become idiotic with this, you see, TA action. How long should you sit around and suffer with no TA action? Well, it's an interesting question. Depends on the level of the PC. Depends on what you're auditing and everything of the sort. But if the PC is happy and you're running a fairly high-level process on the PC, and you're getting no tone arm action, the worst I would suspect that you probably weren't clipping the overt side of it, or your brackets were out in some particular way. See, I'd blame it on flows. And if after a while, wasn't any place with this, and there was no tone arm action, but there had been, and there should be tone arm action on the process, I'd start adding, the ARC process, for instance, I'd start adding another leg. Just to make sure. The PC, for instance, answering it, you know, as what communication has not been acknowledged or something like this. See? Well, he apparently is always auditing it as his own communication that hasn't been acknowledged, and he stuck himself with a flow here somehow or another. Well, I just open up the auditor's always at liberty to add legs on processes, you see. So I just open up my kit and I'd figure out how to word this process. So what communication of yours has not been acknowledged, and what communication of another's has not been acknowledged, you see. Something of that sort. I'd open it up. I'd have a 6-command process, not a 3, you see. You can make that, by the way, into a 15-command process, but it'd be rather unusual, and you're getting rather ornate by doing so. But I blame that. PC seems to be happy. PC seems to be getting results. PC seems to be cognizing, just we don't have tonine acting. And running engrams, I wouldn't bust the PC out of an engram because they weren't getting tone arm action in an engram. That's nonsense. I'd start worrying if the PC didn't get any tone arm action for a couple of sessions. And then the way I would worry is to park the chain that I was running, and I'd find the overt of the same chain. You see, because that's another way of introducing flows. Overts flow outward, motivators flow inward. So, good. Well, let's run up an overt chain on this. We don't care if it's in the same date periods. You might have the overt chain might be back there. Years. And the chain you've been running is when they were in kindergarten in this life. See? We don't care about the disparity of dates. But whether we are running overts or motivators, we, of course, are running with the same severe system of blocking out the engram by chains. Don't you start departing from that system. I had too much trouble getting that system together. You've got notes on what that system is, and I intend to give you a demonstration on it. But I've been working out the exact commands. I've got it down to the exact commands. How do you like that? No. Exact commands. Interesting. You've got this thing worked out to a point where the PC can predict what the auditor's going to say. He feels more comfortable, too. The only thing you can get in trouble with is you're finding minor incidents inside a major incident. That's what you normally run into with a PC can't see. Well, there's a set of commands go with that, too. PC doesn't arrive at the beginning of the incident when told to do so. Use commands A, B, C. You say, is the incident we have a small part of a major incident? You get a read on the meter. Okay. Date the major incident by saying, and so forth. It's a very precise operation, this engram running today, and is only effective if it is precise. And I'm finding out the precision of the running engrams by chains is adding to the PC's recall and precision on the track. That's quite interesting. So when you start to run overts, you run them exactly the same way, except you ask for overt incidents, which are the same type of thing. And your chain is always characterized, and you have a tendency to jump that characterization if you don't watch yourself. You run into a chain of sticking to missed. See, that's the chain you're running. That's a good, long, hefty one. Somebody around here the other day was asking for the first electronic. They were running the chain of electronic incidents. Oh, blow your brains out, man. The first electronic incident, I don't think you could express it on this wall up here. With a microscopic set of zeros following a one, following from the top of the wall, straight across, next line, 1 millimeter down from the last line, clear on down to the bottom. A thetan is an electronic incident. You have to be fairly careful what you ask for. PC says, well, I don't know, I seem to go into apathy every time I try to do anything to these people. Well, let's see. You go start running the chain doing things to people. There were people in this universe when you arrived at some vast date. In fact, the mist body, the physical meat body, is one of the standard phenomena of this universe. And so there you are. You're going to run down the first time they ever did that? Well, that's too much of a bite for the PC, that's all. Let's be more finite. Let's be more finite about it. What are these people doing to you? Well, they're shooting at me. All right, tested on the meter. Let's run back a chain of shooting at people. Q and A. There are uses to Q and A, and that's one of them. He isn't going to go back very far shooting at people. Thetans don't shoot at people. He'll run along a bunch of wars or something like that. But you take something that he's worried about and can reach. And sometimes your TA action on running engrams is suddenly that you've just bitten off more than you can chew. You're running a chain on holding still. Or you're running a chain on being held still. That'd be even worse, see. Well, of course, you're asking for a bunch of still incidents. Well, that in itself will give you a stuck TA. That's rather elementary. If you were very, very clever, you could make engram running, if the PC could run engrams, produce almost any TA action you wanted. You run stills, you get no TA action. You run masses, you get a rising tone arm. You get how you could throw the question. All right, let's run back the first time you were afraid of mass. See, you can get a nice rising tone arm. So far. I don't know quite what causes a low tone arm, to tell you the truth, because I've scouted it over a few times. But it's some kind of a negative avoidance type of mechanism of some kind or another. But it's something peculiar, but you probably could throw a TA negative, you could probably throw it positive, and you could probably run a chain of pleasure moments as all the times you were clear. You probably produce a clear, see, just by running incidents when they were clear. Get this validated. What you validate, you produce. To a very marked degree, you see. With this exception, you get them to confront what they don't want to confront, and therefore the production of that then ceases to go on automatic, don't you see? But if you were giving a limited run and weren't trying really to run anything out, but just giving everything a limited run, you could throw the case any way you wanted to throw the case. You could run the type of incident that would throw the case that way. Don't you see? I know it sounds weird, but you could. That'd be an improper way to run engrams because you're trying to run the chain that'll make the PC snap and pop and make him into good shape. So therefore, you run what he can confront, almost. You're upgraded his confront. It's just a not quite. He doesn't know about this, and you find it for him on the meter, but it's real to him because it reads on the meter. Your best test of is it real to the PC is does it read on the meter? I mean, that's elementary. Now, the combination of all these processes are based on the factors which I've given you in this lecture. I don't know whether or not this data has any vast value to you or not in putting together processes. I'm trying to give you some kind of an idea of the woof and warp of what makes up a chart or a scale or a recommendation of you run, reach, and withdraw on this PC. See, the various things that go into this. And how much you're expected to vary from that, or not vary from that, or something of the sort. All these things go into action. So it boils down to the fact that modern processes are built against the degree of withdrawal of the individual into himself, and what process will lead the PC out from himself so that he no longer feels so restricted about the thing. Now, that's the most basic action, and that, of course, is found in reach and withdraw. I told Fred the other day and run some of you on reach and withdraw from bulletins. It's been about knocking some of your heads off. Not from the significance of the bulletin, just from a bulletin. See? Reach and withdraw from a bulletin. In one case, well, I just wrote the word Scientology on a card. Reach and withdraw from the word Scientology. Just about knock the student's head off. Now, that, of course, is literal, see? Reach and withdraw, see, from something like this. Well, the pervasiveness of these lower-scale processes is something which you, as an auditor, should have cognizance of. You shouldn't go on expecting somebody to keep putting your foot in footprints all the time. See? Somebody's walked this way, and there it is. You'd have some knowledge of what makes a process process, and why we have these processes, and which way they tend to go, and so forth. We have just a few basic classes of processes. There's a very few of these. But each one matches its own levels of case. And the total criteria of it is the case will respond under auditing to the process. And that's the only criteria. Now, of course, you can always undercut a case too seriously. You take some bird that's perfectly capable of running n-grams, and you run reach and withdraw. Well, I'm sure you can run reach and withdraw for a long time. This character can run reach and withdraw. He's perfectly capable along this line. He might even get change. He might even get tone arm action. But that isn't a good enough reason. So the one other factor that enters into it, and this is where the art of the auditor is involved, and it's an art, is getting some estimation of where the case must lie and upgrading the case from that point. And that requires some skill, because you could run a case too low and give them a lose. See? And the way to do that is to always run a case a little steep. You always run the case just a little steeper than the case thinks it should be run. The reaction of the case to auditing, as to whether or not the case ARC breaks or protests or something like that, has practically nothing to do with what you run on the case. You'll find some cases, here's where you make a mistake on this. The case goes yow, 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 yow. Okay. Look amongst that yow, yow, yow and find out if the case is executing the auditing command. That's what's important. It isn't whether the case is going yow, yow, yow. You told the case to go to streams, trillion, trillion, quadrillion years, see? And the case said, God damn it, you bypassed about 80,000 incidents all in one bunch, and so forth. That's all he said. And you look at this protest and you say immediately, well, the case hasn't done it. And you'd be surprised. If you carry out your routine on almost a muzzle basis, you say, what are you looking at? You acknowledge what he said, yes. And what are you looking at? You'll find out that he's at 80 squillion, quintillion, springing years, looking at this cotton-founded, cotton-picking camel. Who wants anything to do with this camel, see? And you get the whole notion of it. Because protest is a common denominator of the whole track in this universe. And your case goes through phases of protest. Protest is probably more vital to a case than duplicate. It's how he makes these pictures in the first place. And there's a terrific amount of technology mixed up in this thing called protest. Now, the only level of processing which remains as a wide-open level of processing is level two. And I'm working very industriously at level two. And making very good progress at level two. How you amputate total time track, you know. I've made some good progress. I've already found a theoretical method, haven't tested it out, but found a theoretical method where you locate one point at the beginning of the incident. This is very theoretical. If you locate one point at the beginning of the incident, you have the PC, you pass the PC through the incident once or twice so he knows what it is. Then you locate one point at the beginning of the incident, having picked up one consideration toward the beginning of the incident, and the n-gram vanishes. Isn't that interesting? I found it so, but that's the subject of another lecture. Benefit by this one. Thank you very much.